You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Kei te whakarongo koe ki te Wire, marunga irirangi pō.
The Wire.
Our final interview on the show today. As you will know, over the weekend, former Cuban leader Fidel Castro died, aged 90. Castro brought communism to the island nation, overthrowing dictator Fulgencio Batista during the revolution of 1959. His death has been met with mixed reactions, with parties in the streets of Miami amongst the local Cuban community who fled his rule, while others have celebrated what he achieved as leader in the form of bringing free education and healthcare to the country. Well, earlier, I was very fortunate enough to speak to Cuba's ambassador to New Zealand, Mario Elzugarre Rodriguez, about Castro's death and his legacy.
Well, it's a very difficult moment. I think at the age of Fidel, we all knew that this was something that would have to happen. But it's still difficult for us to, especially for a generation that was born after 1959, to imagine Cuba without Fidel. He was like the father of our nation in the 20th century, and has done a lot in for social justice and a lot of social programs that have had a great impact, I think, not only in Cuba but in the world. And we are still in shock, no matter what was his age and what was his stage.
He's quite a sort of divisive figure, isn't he? Most people have an opinion on him, whether it's good or bad.
Well, I think we live in a divisive world. I don't think he is the one who is divisive. I think the world, it's in a very interesting moment with so many forces coming in here. From our perspective, the side that Fidel has chosen is, as I said before, a side of having social justice high in his agenda. And I would reckon that people that won't recognize that is probably because they are defending a different interest. There's
right.
a lot of greed, and there's a lot. We are in a world in which most of the interest sometimes are followed and are pushed by a lot of greed and the interest of that what consumption society and what sometimes a market economy just push you through, and Fidel was less about individual thinking but more about the society in general. And I understand that there is a lot of people that have concerns about it because they are thinking more about personal interest, and it's totally understandable. But I think it's the world in we live, which is very divisive.
How did Cuba change, do you think, under his rule?
Well, in 1959, we lived in a country in which more than half of the population had no access to health, proper health care, proper housing, proper education, and you look at the changes, and it's outstanding what a small country of 11 million people has done, especially under the U.S. embargo, because people don't understand very well the U.S. embargo, but most of nations that have faced a situation like this one, and coming from the biggest economy in the world, which happens to be just 90 miles away from Cuba. So I think it's outstanding having no support at all financially, economically, in trade with the United States. I mean, it would be hard to imagine New Zealand if dairy industry could not get their old cows and sell to the United States their beef or whatever. It would be hard to imagine any country in the world successfully driving their economy without any contact with the United States. And further than that, having the United States imposing sanctions on financial institutions that trade and have deals with Cuba, like it has been the case.
Overall, do you think Fidel and his rule was good for Cuba?
Oh, definitely. I think look at the influence Cuba has now, and look at the place humans, society, people have in our society. I think, you know, it's outstanding. We have health care levels and educational level and access to a lot of social achievements that were just in dreams before 1959. And if you look at our economy and our society previous to 1959, it was disastrous. And we have a lot of shortcomings. We have a lot of things to move on, but we have definitely improved.
What would you say to people who say he disrespected human rights?
Well, the problem of human rights, it's what is the concept of human rights? Because what we think in Cuba is you got to look at fundamental rights. And fundamental rights for us is access to food, access to education, access to health care. You can't talk, a lot of people talk about human rights in places where and concentrate on civil and politicals, which in Cuba are really well, very well respected. We have our own democracy, and democracy works in Cuba. The thing is, like, they want to standardize a concept that depends on your historical background. And I'm really stunned at the fact that sometimes they care more about something else than food bank. How anyone is going to get concerned about any other thing without being starving and without health care, without proper education? You look at Latin America, you look at Africa, you look at Asia, and a lot of places. There are countries that have done wonderfully well, but there are countries that have a lot of tensions. And I am so surprised whenever I think that people don't care, and some people criticizing our society, they don't care about the situation of people that are illiterate. And how could you give political and rights to someone who can't read? That's hilarious. And this is the model sometimes they want to impose to very poor societies, in which those people could not exercise properly the rights of democracy without understanding anything, because they cannot even read a sign of McDonald's down in the street.
What does his death mean for U.S.-Cuban relations now?
Well, I think we are in a position in which we will be willing to continue the moment. The biggest problem in Cuba-U.S. relation, it's first of all the U.S. Embargo. I think the U.S. embargo has a great impact in Cuban life. There's also the issue of the Guantanamo Bay. Mm-hmm. The funny thing is that in the United States, there's not a single debate on whether the Guantanamo Bay is given back to Cuba, but only about closing or not the prison, which is very interesting, because it's in a legitimate occupied territory. And trying to influence the internal affairs in Cuba, we will be more willing to move on with whomever administration would be, but on a basis of mutual respect, of respect for both countries' national interest and sovereignty, and this is instrumental. The point is, like, in our history, it's not a problem from now, but in our history, the interest of the United States has been all the time to shape the society, not in Cuba, but in all Latin America. And the Guantanamo Bay was the result of that. We never got independence until 1902, until the first Cuban government at the moment accepted very weird stipulations, one of them being the Platt Amendment. And it was established that the U.S. could interfere in Cuban affairs whenever a national interest of the U.S. were threatened. And the national interest of the United States is always a very elastic concept. And whenever they would be willing to respect our sovereignty and our country's independence, right, there would be no issues, and we could move forward because we're willing to move forward. And there's no sanctions from Cuba to the United States. There's no negative attitudes from Cuba to the United States. So whenever they pose this question, it's on the U.S. side to decide whether they want to continue moving on. And we are more likely willing to. And in the last 2 years, there have been some advances. I think the U.S. government could have done more. The embargo is also a prerogative of the U.S. Congress. It won't go down unless the U.S. Congress agrees to. But we have also managed to move on in certain cooperation with different agencies from both sides, and we're more willing to work on. It would depend more on the position of the next administration.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.